Welcome. If you're looking for a story, a dose of the stranger than fiction side of the world we live in, then you've come to the right place. There are a lot of stories to choose from, and today's is a new story about what is real and what is right. It's a story that tests our beliefs in ourselves to know what is happening, what happened before us, and what could happen to us. They call me the Ghost. I'm ex-CIA and now a dark operative on the dark web. Today is part one of a story about truth and reality, your reality. Take a listen and enjoy. So recently, there have been conversations and comments that I've seen in Shadow Ops that actually made me shift from the original job I was going to talk about today when I got back to this. It's all along the same lines, though. You know, putting up that topic about living in a matrix, many of you were discussing the idea, you know, living in a simulation. And this is very similar to that. I get this request. I'm by myself and I'm looking at it, not all the way sure what to make of it. It's from a woman and it's about her husband. Well, both of them really, but he is the one directly affected so far by the problem. At least that's what she originally thought. In the request, the woman says things like, the reality around us is changing and how the world we live in may not be reliable. She goes on with stuff like that for a while, and then she says she doesn't even know if I am real, me, the ghost, that she doesn't know if anything is. She says she will wait for a response, and she supposes that that will be her confirmation that I'm real. So that's really strange. The beginning of this request sounded really like someone in a panic and very confused. She says that it's them, that they are corrupt, at least she thinks so, but the truth needs to be found and confirmed. Her husband is acting strange, and although his behavior is very real, what he's doing isn't right. Things are not as they should be, and this woman feels that they, both her and her husband, have unwittingly participated in the problem. She tells me that she is devastated and gets a little bit more into the details. She tells me that they're currently working in India, and because of the uniqueness of their issue and the major potential dangers involved, they need someone who can come in discreetly, someone who can be trusted, and who can get the issues taken care of before it's too late. She closes by telling me that if this is not taken care of, the world as we know it will not be what we know at all. Our experiences, what we've come to know in our lifetimes, that have made us who we are, our lives will change. We will all be infected and affected, and this in turn will change all that the world will be. She says it will be a new world, their world. So first of all, I get this request. I read all of that and I definitely need to do research. This woman did leave her name, and for the telling of this story, I will call her Madison Vachon. That's French. It's a French last name because her husband is French. We will call him Patrice, Patrice Vachon. And just as I start digging into things here on who these people are and what's going on, my team returns to the warehouse. They were out picking up and bringing back some of our vehicles after we had some enhancements done to them. But anyway, it was good timing. So Harley comes over and joins me right away and we start to dig into what we can. And here's what we found out. Patrice and Madison have been married for 8 years. They have done well for themselves, both in the medical field. They met at a conference. Patrice is an epidemiologist, and upon doing our research, we find him to be a good one. Madison's expertise is pathology, and she's not too bad herself, although she's not working right now. We find that, yes, they are currently in a small town in India. The two people that we see who appear to be in charge of whatever they have going on are from a large European company. A pharmaceutical company, of which I cannot name here, but they all used to work there, and it looks like they left that company and have started up this new gig, and they're working and doing it in India, recruiting others in the pharmaceutical and medical worlds to come with them. It was not easy to find information on this company, and I'll go ahead and give them a name also. I'll call them Privius. And note, I always try to use names that either sound the same or hold the same purpose as what's really going on. And what exactly are they doing at Privius in India? Well, that proves hard to find. It takes some serious digging to find at least some of that information buried deep within filings and documents. It seems they could possibly be doing something pharmaceutical, but the notes on all of that are a bit sketchy, so I can't really say or confirm that that is what's going on at that point. And now the India thing. The fact that they are in a small town in south central India, and the fact that they are not putting a single thing out there for any of the people to see, makes this very strange. But we can see that they're absolutely there, and that our Patrice and Madison are in India as well. After our digging is done, we all agree that this is worth checking out, and we also all agree that this has a bad vibe to it. Well, I let Madison know that we will be on our way. Now, because I get this feeling that this is something bad that will need immediate attention, I don't just go for a meeting. A lot of times I'll go have a meeting first and figure out what I want to do. But I get some of the team members together, most of them, and we pack it up as if we're headed to an already agreed upon job. We don't know exactly what the issues here are, though, so we pack quite a bit of stuff based on our predictions of what this job might be. I mean, either one, these guys are putting together something awesome, and they're far away and essentially hidden because they want to perfect their little invention, and they don't want anyone to catch on while they're doing that. It's something good, and they want to be the heroes in the end, with no one stealing their ideas before it's ready. Or two, they're doing something they don't want anyone to know about, period, because it's not awesome, and it's not something good. Because of Madison, I would like it to be the former, but I'm pretty much, my confidence and my opinion is leaning that it's the latter, as does the team. For this trip, I load up heavy. No reason not to. I brought Frankie, Jagger, Scarlet, and Harley. Ryder will be the one staying back to hold down the fort in case anything goes wrong, or we need her to send us anything else, or get us out of anything, should it come down to that. We get all packed up, we get ready for travel, and we are on our way. We get to this small town, and we kind of check it out before we get too settled. There are large round towers, all the way down to tiny box shops, all squished together. There is a dried up fountain in the middle of what I guess you'd call town square. Red signs, pink signs, orange buildings mixed in with dull beige ones. So many old buildings, and then all of a sudden you'd see this more modern design building with lots of glass. What was that doing there? For how small the town was, it was pretty busy. All kinds of different cars and carts and people walking everywhere. It's definitely a unique place. We get to where we're going to be staying. With my connections, I was able to get us a nice apartment in the nicer area of downtown. It actually does belong to someone and it's fully furnished, but they're not in town at the moment, and we have approval to use it. And it turns out that it's a great place for us to have. We have areas to sleep, areas to work. There's enough space to lay things out if we need to. Leaving our bags and supplies with Jagger, Scarlet, and Harley, Frankie and I head back out again to meet with Madison. After we unload and Frankie and I head back out, we get through the downtown area, as it were, and we start to head to more of the outskirts, as Madison has directed us, and where we also know from our research she is staying. We get there, and it's in a type of residential part of this town. The houses are not super close together where we are. They're kind of set back. You can see the front of her house, but around the sides and all in back are these giant trees, big leaves, big trees. The house has two levels. It's white with blue on it, and the house looks nice, and the trees are impressive. Madison sees us driving up the driveway, or small roadway, really, to her place, and comes out to greet us. We all go through introductions, and she tells me that Patrice is not home, and she actually didn't even tell him we were coming, that she doesn't feel like she can. And then we go inside, she gives us a quick tour of the place. I mean, they're in another country in a rental home, but I have to say that they did not skimp out on anything. These guys have money, and you can see that they're paying for some comforts while they're away. This place has stone out front, you know, where the small deck would be. All floors on the inside, they're done in stone. The colors on the walls are all pastels, and in different places they have small designs painted on them. The windows all have black metal framing. The stairway to the second level had a brushed metal railing, and again, more stone on the floor. It had a look, for sure. Not something that you really would see if you were in the States. Furniture was perfect. I mean, you get the idea. These guys had a nice place, and it was very organized, as I really expected from the people I got to know in our research. We sit down in the eating area of the kitchen, and Madison starts setting down cups on the table, followed by a teapot. So we get all that set up, and then we start to get into it. She thanks us for coming, and as she's pouring the tea, I see that she's shaking a small bit. Frankie and I both notice it, figuring it's her nerves. She's talking and she's handling herself okay, but when she sits down, that's when she loses it. She goes to pick up her cup of tea and instead sets it back down and lowers her head and just starts to cry. Frankie's sitting across from her at this little table and I'm next to her. So I put my hand on her shoulder and I lean in and I let her know that we are there to listen and hopefully we can help her with her problem. She regains herself. She wipes the tears from her face. She starts telling us about why she called on us. And she starts out by telling us a little bit more about Patrice. That Patrice has been working for this new company, Privius, for quite a while now. He was quite happy in his old position, but when he came home that one Friday, very excited, he told Madison he had something that they needed to think about. Time was of the essence. He had a chance at a new opportunity to help create something that would be safe and that could be beneficial to people's lives, and that no one else had done it before. That's how it was presented to Patrice, and that's how he presented it to Madison. His duties, if you will, would include things like conducting studies meant to help prevent problems with what they were doing, collect data, analyze, and again, weed out any problems or failures. That's what she said. She explains to us that the timing is perfect because the two heads, the two main guys that work at Privius, are in meetings back in the States, so they're not even there. And that's actually good because hopefully that will give us better access to what's going on there. And Madison keeps talking, but she's kind of beating around the bush. So I interrupt her politely and I flat out ask her, what is Patrice collecting data on? What is he helping to ensure that there will be no problems or failures? The minute I ask the question, she starts to choke up again. This is obviously very difficult for her to talk about. However, she does eventually get it out. And she tells me that she doesn't even know. She does not know what kind of tests they're running or what their work involves. All she does know is that they're working with nanorobotics. And that gets our interest. If you don't know about nanorobotics, nanobots, it refers to nanotechnology. And in this case, you know, little machines, tiny robots, microscopic. It's technology to be used in space, medicine. And the medicine part is what got Patrice interested. Out in the real world, nanorobotics are a hopeful. A real thing for treatment of things like aneurysms, kidney stones, cancer, as well as defects in someone's DNA. The idea is that these little robots can go in and save the day, save lives. I mean, how would you like it if you could be injected with these little nanorobots and they could go in and clear out all your arteries? Or maybe you have cancer and they could deliver the medicine in just the right way and eat away at the cancer. You'd be cured. They are the way of the future. But Madison has called on us for a reason, and it's not because they're getting ready to cure cancer. She takes a deep breath and then tells us what she does know or think. She sits back in her chair, sitting up straight. She puts her hands, palms down on the table in front of her. She starts talking, almost in a dreamy, bothered, accusatory way. She tells us that Privius did such a good job of collecting up all the smart minds, that they're all there together, working together, sharing information, and doing the work for those heads, the ones in charge at Privius. She herself has not met those in charge of this project, whatever it is, but she tells me that obviously her husband has because he reports to them. When she asked Patrice who they were and what the details of what they were working on are, he just always tells her that this is a top secret project, and until it goes public, he's not going to disclose any information, that he even signed a non-disclosure for the purpose of keeping the information secure during this project and the research and the testing. It all seemed to make sense in the beginning, sure. I mean, if her husband is going to be part of something that's going to explode and be a huge win in the world, he can keep the company secrets. To both her and Patrice, that was worth it. But now things have changed. She said she's not even sure that Patrice is aware of what's happening. But after this last week, she is certain that something's going down, something is happening to her husband, and maybe herself. Her husband was acting strange, maybe forgetful, maybe not, maybe his thoughts were just jumbled. For instance, they had a dinner party, she tells us, with some people that Patrice works with, not that long ago, and they were talking about birthdays for whatever reason, and Patrice was talking about his and Madison's birthday months. And then he looked at Madison as if he couldn't even remember when her birthday was. After a small silence, she blurts it out. Her birthday is in July. Patrice just went on talking, but he also had this kind of confused look on his face. Madison just blew it off. Maybe he had too much wine with dinner. But then there were more things. In other conversations, he questioned the Wall Street crash in the 80s and Black Monday. He swore the whole Bill Clinton-Lewinsky thing never happened, and in fact, he had a whole different version of what did happen. After a few of these types of incidences, Madison decided to just sit back and not challenge the things he was saying, but rather to try to figure out why he was saying them. One night, he even came up with a new upbringing. He was talking to Madison about his fond memories of his childhood in Oklahoma, how his parents relocated from France when he was little, and now he missed his small life on the farm in Oklahoma. Sounds great, but Patrice came to the United States as an adult and has never lived in Oklahoma. And these are just a few examples, but Madison had many. All of it put together had her seriously questioning what was going on with his work. Her theory is that on top of any nanorobotics, they're also working with chemicals, maybe harsh chemicals or something, because something was affecting her husband. But what was it? She felt strongly that it was something illegal, that something illegal was going on because they were so secretive. She looks up at both me and Frankie and had this look of both anger and panic on her face, like she was either going to break out in tears or bust out screaming. She wanted to know what the secret project was that was going on at Privius. What those guys were really doing, because she felt it was doing harm. And why all the secrets? She couldn't get any information from her husband because he refused to tell her about anything he was working on. And then there was another thing. She said that after a little while of this crazy memory of his and thought problem that he was having, Madison decided to try to have lunch with him at work. She usually didn't do this because his work was so important, but she used the excuse that because he's there all the time, she thought maybe they could spend some time having lunch together. Now, Patrice had to get the okay to do this, and there were conditions. There were only certain parts of the building that Madison was allowed to go to, and she had to bring her own food and drink. She thought that was a little bit strange, but then realized, as her husband explained, that they have a lot of experiments and things going on, and the employees get checked and have to go through different levels of sanitation to work on anything. And they're just being extra cautious, as their project is so important, and they want as few problems as possible. Again, this seemed reasonable. She followed the rules, and they ate what she brought, and then she left. But what she does want to know is why she has felt strange ever since that day. She feels it was the building, adding that she never did go back to Privius, even though Patrice's workday seemed to be getting longer and longer. She doesn't want to feel too paranoid or overly so, but why is it that she feels like she's experiencing some memory loss and confusion? And people do have blunders, slips, a thought clot, or faux pas. One example for Madison of this is that she had to go look up, actually go find in her scrapbooks, the name of her hometown. Of course, she should know that, and in the end, it was on the tip of her tongue, but she just couldn't get the obvious thought or memory to come up. It wasn't until she could find it in a book of memories that she could confirm it. And like I said, it happens, but not like it was happening to Madison. Suddenly, she was unsure about so many things in her life. Not as bad as her husband, who seemed to be fabricating new memories out of thin air, but her memory felt messed up. Was it? She was now questioning all the thoughts she had. She couldn't tell one from the other anymore. What was real? What wasn't? She was sure it had to do with Patrice's work. That's why she called on me. She remembered that she had my information from a colleague. At least that's what she thought and was hoping for. Not sure why, and just like how we felt before we left, Frankie and I have this feeling that Privius is not doing something wonderful. I let Madison know, though, that if we find nothing, and it appears that they're working and it's all legit, that will end what we do on this. And at that point, she might want to fly home and get checked out. But for now, we're going in. Back at the apartment, we start to strategize and organize. This company is secure, not even letting a relative into the real inside. We all decide and agree that Scarlett, who is always our good undercover team member, will be a part of our first visit to Privius, and Frankie will go with her, just to be there, making their presence a little more impactful, if you know what I mean. The building itself, where they are, is pretty big. It's built in the older style of the town, and it's not right in the middle of downtown. It's kind of on the outskirts of the city. It has a lot of trees around it, and you can't miss the huge sign that says Privius Labs. I make a small mental note of that as well, though, because Labs is fine, but why didn't they call it Privius Pharmaceuticals? Pharmaceuticals is more specific. So I just make a note of that. Before Scarlett and Frankie head over to the building, Jagger, Harley, and I, we set ourselves up in different places around the building. We don't really want to be seen together because a group would draw more attention than an individual. So I'm at a small coffee shop cafe place on the corner diagonal and down the road a bit from Privius Labs. To the left of the building and across the street, there's a small park. And you can see the front of the building from there, and that's where Jagger goes. He just sits down on a bench and pretends to read one of the local newspapers. And Harley plants herself in front of a magazine rack that's actually pretty close to where I am and just makes it look like she's browsing through different magazines. But she also has her eyes on the building. We all have our communicators on, our special watches. We all have hidden earpieces as well. We can hear each other and talk to each other. The watches reassure us that we're all connected and live, shows our locations as well, just in case anything goes wrong and one of us is moved to some other location against our will. So at 8 a.m. on the dot, Scarlett and Frankie walk through the front doors of Privius. She sees the big metal sign, and we can see that through the front door, but we can't really see anything else. They find a small, long table there underneath their sign, Privius, with a potted plant on the right side, but to Scarlett's surprise, she doesn't find any reception desk, welcome desk, and she doesn't see any people. Instead, once you walk in, you can either go left and then go down a hallway or go to the right and go down a hallway. So there's this middle wall with the big Privius sign and two hallways. And her and Frankie are just checking things out. The hallways are all lined with doors, but then in the hallway to the right, she finally sees a man coming. He's almost running down the hall towards her. Frankie is at the opposite end of this entryway at that time, and he kind of stays over there. The man pops out into the front entryway, and he looks frazzled, like he's been up all night, which there's a good chance he could have been. He's fixing his hair, he's tucking in his shirt a bit, and then he greets Scarlett with a, "Can I help you?" Then he tells her that he saw her come in through the cameras, and he points to the cameras hanging on the two corners of the entryway. Well, Scarlett goes right into it and introduces herself as Brenda Schreiner, an agent for foreign inspections out of Maryland in the United States. She shows him a fake ID, one that we put together the night before, and tells him that she is there for the inspection. They go back and forth on this because this man, who finally introduces himself as Mr. Watson, has no idea what she's talking about because there really is no appointment. She tells him with confidence, however, that she's been talking to both a Mr. Thompson and a Mr. Hill, and those are the two guys that are in charge, and that there is definitely an inspection scheduled. And Frankie, he's still kind of staying back and out of the way during all of this part. Scarlett walks over to the small table that's there and plops down her briefcases, pops it open, and pulls out a folder, which is labeled Privius. She sorts through a few papers that also have Privius all over them, and she pulls one out, and she just hands it to him. He takes it from her reluctantly with an annoyed look on his face, and then that's when Frankie moves in a little bit closer. Mr. Watson just looks up at him, and Frankie just folds his arms across his chest, and all he says is, "Good to meet you. I'm Donovan Todd." Mr. Watson slowly and almost cautiously looks away from Frankie and starts to read more of what's on that paper. And basically, the paper is saying that they have already had communications with this location and that they have approval to do an inspection, and failure to allow that inspection will result in consequences. The letter's addressed to the heads, with signatures and everything, ones we dug up. Now, while Mr. Watson is reviewing the paperwork some more, Scarlett removes a button that is hooked to her belt. It was there just meant to look like a decoration, and she very slowly and smoothly sticks it to the underside of that table, just under where her briefcase is, in the front entryway there. She waits just a bit and then checks her computer watch, as if she's checking the time, and she gets a signal that that little gadget she planted has found an internet signal. The one that they're using inside that building. Don't have access yet, but we'll get to that later. Those of us that aren't there can also see through our computer watches that that small device is set. And I'm in a booth at that cafe. I can see the building through the large window. And knowing that we're in, I open up my laptop and I get to work immediately. I hook into that little device and I start the process of hacking into their internet. And I have to say, for a group that is very paranoid about their secrecy and security, it wasn't actually all that hard to do, and I was a little bit surprised. At the same time I'm doing that, Jagger breaks out his laptop from a bag he brought with him, and he starts to get to work doing his thing. He gets all set up, and once I've hacked into the internet, he now knows that he can go in and start messing with the phone lines. Like many companies, Privius uses cloud calling, so we don't have to do a lot of digging around and deeper hacking to get into the phone line, so that makes it really easy because instantly Jagger can route any outbound calls going to the cell phones of the two heads. If they make any of those calls, he's going to set it up so that they will get errors and fake voicemails and things like that to stall them from actually getting a hold of anyone. While all of that is going on, Scarlett and Frankie are firm in their demand that they have set this appointment, so they have to inspect. You can see that Mr. Watson, he's starting to consider the idea. And on one hand, he doesn't have any knowledge of this appointment, and if he lets people in that he shouldn't, there's going to be some very big problems. But on the other hand, if this truly was something agreed to by Mr. Thompson and Mr. Hill, then they must have a reason for allowing it at this time, and in that case, he should let them in. Mr. Watson thinks about it for a minute, and then he asks if Scarlett and Frankie could come back the next day. Scarlett and Frankie agree, and they leave. With these inspections, if a company pushes back on having it done, it can cause a lot of problems. And the people at Privius know this. The easier thing to do is to let someone come in and see what you're doing, and then hopefully the inspectors will just go away and have no reason to watch you or come back anytime soon. Okay, so the next day, Scarlett and Frankie are ready for their inspection, which is set for 10 in the morning. And I'm actually going to go with them this time because we can't have all of us go, but we do need more eyes snooping around. So I'll be there to look around. I'm not really going to say much. I'll just have a notepad and I'll be acting like I'm taking notes, but really I'm going to be collecting information about what's going on inside that facility. And Frankie's going to do some of that also, leaving Scarlett to do most of the talking and really conduct the inspection. When we get there, it's very quiet. We passed by a lot of offices. Their doors are open. It's an attempt to show us, no doubt, how transparent they are. But only a few people are actually occupying any of those offices. A lot of them, most of them actually, are empty. No one's there. You get the feeling that a lot of people were told to stay home because we were coming. We tell them that we are there to inspect the nanorobots they are working on to make sure that they are keeping up with the standards. There are big companies right now working on nanobots. It's a real thing. You've got universities and businesses, and they're called different things, you know, nanorobots, nanobots, different things. But these tiny guys, you know, are meant to go on and do great things for us if they work. And there has to be standards because they're going to be injected and placed in people's bodies. So it's important. So this inspection would not really be questioned in that way. There are many types of uses for nanobots, potentially in the future. Like I mentioned earlier, they could help cure cancer. They could be put inside your body to help deliver medicine. They could help with brain disorders, diabetes. We find, with even more digging, that Privius is putting themselves out there, of the information you actually can find if you dig deep enough, as a preventative lab. What they say they are doing is testing to find ways to ensure as close to 100% as they can get that the nanobots they would create would not be rejected by a person's body. Because think about it, if you sent in nanobots to try to take care of an invader on the body, that's great. But the nanobot itself is an invader on the body, and the body would react to this. The white blood cells could attack the little nanobots, and that could start breaking down a person's immune system. So this is a real concern, and it's a big one. So that's a good thing if that's what they're really doing. But we're there to get a really good glimpse of what they're doing to see if any of it makes sense. Is this what they are doing? Is it in line with their said purpose? Remember, Madison is telling us that she fully believes they are really behind the scenes creating some kind of chemical, and it will affect people and their memories and really mess them up. She wants to know if they are and what they're planning on doing with it, if they are. Her concern is something that is good for all of us. When we get to the second floor, that is where they tell us their main lab is. You've got a room full of large science tables, the kind you had in biology or chemistry class. We see glass boxes that have super magnifying glasses. There are a lot of tables, but just like the offices, there aren't many people at those tables. the lab is nowhere near full. We know because it's obvious to us that what they've done is handpick some of their employees to show us what they're working on, but really, they've kind of just shut down for the day. Suspicious. The visit to the lab that day was not all that exciting. What they showed us, of course, was them building these little nanobots, working on them, and the technology that they're using to ensure that they're not rejected by the body. And that's all well and good, but it's what we noticed that they weren't talking about that was so important. For instance, the offices. We walk by one, and although the blinds are closed, the door is open. We see someone bringing in one of those water coolers that Madison described to us that she found in the fridge that day when she was having lunch with her husband. There's a man setting it down on the large conference room table, and he turns around to shut the door and is stunned that I'm standing there watching what he's doing. Well, he rushes over to the door and tells me that they're in a meeting, and he apologizes, and then he closes the door. I asked Mr. Watson, what are they doing in there? That caught him off guard. He pauses with this almost look of shock on his face, a shock that I saw anything at all that he himself is not showing us. He fumbles for some words and ends up telling me that it's just administrative staff and they're in a meeting about products that they use in the office. I just look at him and I smile and I nod as if I accept what he's telling me, but of course I don't. It's not just the water jug that I saw, and the guys in suits that were in there were not administrative staff. And that man was bringing in a water jug. It was about more than that in there. This meeting was something that we were not supposed to see. It must have been something very important if they were there while we were there. On that table in that room, there was a bunch of food and drink items. I also make the observation that there are two kinds of badges. If you've worked in an office, you might have a security badge that a lot of people might, you know, wear around their neck. At Privius, I see people with them around their neck and some have those retractable belt hooks, but that's not the two kinds I'm talking about. I mean, some are green and some are yellow, so I ask about that too. Watson fumbles again as if he didn't expect the question, but explains that there are two types of workers there, people actually conducting work on the nanobots versus all the other staff. Green is for the technical people and the scientific guys, he tells us. Yellow is for everyone else. I just smile and I give him my accepting nod again. Then there was the last little bit about their overall office. As our small little tour and inspection is coming to a close, I see someone coming through a door off in the corner where the stairwell would be. I know there are three levels to that building and we've seen floors 1 and 2, but what is on the third floor? Mr. Watson tells me that it's an area that they will expand into should they be successful with their current research. And I follow up and just say, oh, so that floor is empty then? And he confirms that it is. So, like I said, the tour itself did not seem all that exciting, and our inspection was just really a show on our end. We do not study nanobots, and we're not anywhere near qualified to inspect anything that they're doing. I have to say, though, that they put on a good show as well. Back at our apartment, we discuss what happened. Did we leave there with a confident decision on anything? Not exactly. Number one, yes, they were working on nanobots, and they were showing us their stats and the technology that they were working on to ensure that the body didn't see the nanobot as an invader. And that was pretty cool stuff, actually. But with the knowledge these guys have, they easily could put on a show for anyone regarding that. Also, it was the number of people working there. The problem with that is that I specifically asked how many people work at the facility, and he responded with a, this is it. And he told me that they were really a small shop of high-quality individuals who were working hard to make a breakthrough on this technology. And that right there was simply not true. And the question was, why would he lie about it? All of the science lab tables were cleaned up and bare for presentation, to look as though nothing was happening there. And if someone was just going by quickly and not really paying attention, all they would remember would be empty tables and empty offices. But that's not us. In the offices, sure, the desktops were clean and the shelves looked fairly empty, but people left things behind like coffee cups and garbage in the garbage cans and things like that. The cleaned-off science tables were still filled with supplies underneath. If nothing were happening there, how would there be a need for any of that? And on top of that was what was on those shelves under the lab tables. Syringes, for example. When working with nanotechnology, one way of administering it is the syringe. This is true. However, when I asked Mr. Watson how they do their testing, he said there's a separate facility for that, and they don't do any of that at that location. They send all of their information back to the states, where medical teams take care of that, returning the data to them. If that were the case, they would not need the syringes and other supplies that we observed on our tour. Second thing were those work badges. If you weren't really thinking about it, you might not think twice about accepting his answer. Researcher types versus administrative. However, we were thinking about it. When I looked into that conference room, full of people and food and drink supplies, everyone in there had a yellow badge. Mr. Watson made a mistake on that one. Yellow badges were for the important people, he basically said. So what were all the important people doing in that conference room going over office supplies? And third, the third of the big things was that third floor. I didn't like his answer, and for basically a no-staff staff, they wouldn't even need this building to begin with. And there were other things, but those were the three main things. Mr. Watson was obviously hiding something. He wanted the inspection to go smoothly, and in his mind, he is now done with us. We signed him off, and we went on our way. He hopes to never see us again. So, what did we end up with? The only thing that came out of supporting Madison's idea were really the syringes and other medical supplies that we saw on site that technically didn't need to be there. And the fact that we could tell Mr. Watson was lying did tell us that they were hiding something. None of us, though, got the sense that they were trying to create some kind of chemical for which to mess with people's minds. But they are doing something, something they didn't want us to know about. We call Madison down to the apartment to discuss all that we saw and think. She comes in with even more information on her end about her situation, so we go over that first. With her husband acting increasingly strange, she has been getting more paranoid. He has been doing and saying more odd things, including one day he brought home 2 bags of coffee grounds. Okay, well, that doesn't sound strange. When Madison asked him, though, what it's for, since they have plenty of coffee already and coffee they like, he goes off on this major tangent. He starts going through the cupboards and taking the coffee they do have and throwing it in the trash, swearing by the coffee he brought home, saying that, no, this coffee was better, and that he's been drinking it at work and he loves it and he would like to drink it at home as well. Says it's a new blend, a local blend, and they almost get into a fight about it. Well, they pretty much did. But he wasn't bringing it home like it was something new and fun to try. He was insistent on the fact that they drink this new coffee from now on. He wasn't really asking. So all of that was very strange. And then she tells us about another day that he brought home one of those water jugs, a whole water cooler, in fact, like you might see in the office. Same jug that Madison saw in the fridge at the office. She knew it was the same because, as she explained it to us, it had a unique shape. They were square plastic boxes, not the usual ones you might see out in the world. Anyway, Patrice was saying that the water they had in the house that they rented was just not good, and that they need to drink this new purified water instead. And to make sure this happened, he actually shut off all the water to any of their sinks so that it would force them, both of them, to use the water that he brought home. Because the water at home would only hurt them, he said. So he would be providing their water from now on during their stay in India. And with that one, the water subject wasn't over. After another argument about the water, they both calmed down. But then he starts going after her for not remembering. We're all listening intently to everything she's telling us, and we ask her, remember what? She tells us that he had some crazy idea that something went down with the water, and how could she not remember the last time, when everybody was sick? Well, Madison just let him talk because she knew that none of what he was talking about ever happened, but he really believed it. And until she figured out what was going on, she wasn't going to say anything. She tells us that she played along and just let it go. But things like that have been happening more and more. He has new memories of things that Madison has never heard of. And some memories that he should have, he seems to have lost. What is going on here? To find out, click into part 2 of this story. You're going to want to know. Thank you for listening, and until next time, I will talk to you all soon.